From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. Mark Twain, William Shakespeare, and Harriet Beecher Stowe. These are people who share more than just a legacy of classic literature and a place in school curriculums. They're just some of the authors whose works have been banned from classrooms over the years for content that some deemed controversial or even obscene. And across the country right now, books are once again being challenged in schools and libraries, with librarians holding the line to make sure that there's access to materials some find inappropriate. And here in Idaho, the pressure to remove books from library shelves is coming from activist groups as well as the GOP party. So joining us today to talk more about book banning is Dr. Jonathan Friedman. He is the director of free expression and education programs at PEN America. He will be in Boise later this week as part of a panel discussion at the City Club of Boise, where they will discuss what kinds of books are being challenged and why. And they'll also talk about who should and should not be deciding what books make it onto library shelves and into our children's hands. I want to welcome you to the show.
Great. Great to be here.
So, Dr. Friedman, first, let's briefly discuss the history of book banning, because this is nothing new to the United States.
No, it is not new in the United States. It's not new around the world. We associate often book banning or book burning with Nazi Germany or apartheid South Africa. But there has been a history of efforts to restrict access to books in the United States. It is something, a trend that we have seen flare up at different moments in American history. There are distinct periods where people have gotten more focused on this as an advocacy issue, and then it's gone more quiet. And we are living through arguably not only just another flare, but perhaps, you know, somehow in this year, one of the most extreme flare-ups of this that we have ever seen.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, what we're seeing now really seems to be centered around books that deal with racial issues, books that deal with LGBTQ issues. Why do you think these are the particular issues? I know there's others, but those seem to be the two standouts that we're seeing right now.
Well, I think you can't really separate what's been happening with book challenges from broader trends. For example, the bills that have been introduced in numerous states that we have called educational gag orders, bills to constrain and prohibit teachers from teaching about certain topics in certain ways, or limiting what curriculum that they might offer students. The book bans, of course, are different because most of the time they're focused not on mandatory curriculum, but even elective or voluntary mm-hmm. reading in school libraries. And that's quite different. We're talking about limiting and often, you know, calls to remove access whole cloth to books because, you know, one group of people or one person objects to them, and they would like to limit the ability for everybody else to read those books. So that's really the dynamics that we're talking about here when we talk about this issue. You know, I think there has been, in the wake of the George Floyd protests, a rise in calls for diversity or racial reckoning. And in response to that, a backlash that has sought to undo its gains. There have been significant gains in the LGBTQ community in terms of representation and in terms of the normalization of things like gay marriage or mm-hmm. transgender identities. And I think that how that has trickled and been reflected in literature is something that makes a lot of people uncomfortable, and they don't want it there. And so as those stories have been integrated into schools, now we are seeing an effort to basically scrub those gains and reverse them.
Mm. You know, it's interesting. I remember people trying to ban Judy Blume books when I was a kid. And one being the book Forever because of its, you know, sexual content. And all it made me want to do was go find the book, which I did, and read it in seventh grade. And, you know, it's interesting to me to see this, you know, decades later, that we are seeing this as what your organization calls deeply undemocratic by banning books. Can you explain what your organization means by that? And I bring up anecdotally what I said about finding a book that people wanted to ban, that adults wanted to ban, because I was more like, well, what's all the fuss about? So let me go read it.
Yeah, I think the way to think about it is this, that there has been in a plurality decision by the Supreme Court in 1982, where they faced this specific, you know, a similar set of issues or facts that we've seen playing out around the country in the past year. And really, the way to think about this is centered on the question of under what circumstances is it reasonable for a body like a school board or school administrators to decide to remove access to books that are in those public institutions from everyone else. And you can think about like the undemocratic nature of any kind of decree by that body that something that is there must be removed right away. And in particular, that the demand that has been driving this in more often than not is not isolated cases. It is a kind of movement, a wave of censorship, in particular, targeting specific identities that are reflected in these books. And very often, I think over 90%, according to our data, the decisions to remove the books based on those demands are not also being carried out in a democratic way, meaning there's an opportunity to read a book, to talk about it holistically, to engage librarians and professional administrators, to engage even, you know, a full representation of parents in a community on what they think about a book. And so what's been happening too often is that one person's feeling about a book is what carries the day. And it's remarkable that in so many places, it's not even clear that that person has read the book in full or understands the context of the passages in the book to which that they are objecting. Now, in terms of the Supreme Court, you know, how we should think about this, the library and the school library in particular, we know from the court that young people do have free speech rights in schools. You know, they do have First Amendment rights, even though they are not, you know, even though they are minors in schools. Mm-hmm. And the school library in particular is a regime of voluntary inquiry. And in this context, the school board is a government agent. And so what is being called upon is for government, the state, to suppress ideas from circulation. And that impacts not only freedom of reading, but freedom of speech and freedom of thought. And that is why this is so undemocratic and so concerning.
And talk about the impact that these bans are having on students, because in research that your organization has done, I mean, you go as far as saying that there are very harmful impacts, in particular to historically marginalized groups.
Yeah, I think we have to recognize that. I've heard it said by an author that when a book with LGBTQ identities is targeted and removed because of those identities, because of that content, it means that you are essentially targeting that person as well and saying that they don't belong in society or, you know, don't belong in a school library. And, you know, in some cases, these books do have sexual content, and there's a kind mm-hmm. of long simmering conversation about at what age young people should be able to learn about sex. But we have to distinguish between that debate and this question about whether you could have a book that even has a, in one case, just a cartoon illustration of what might be a same-sex couple in it, and that should be a rationale for restricting and banning that book entirely from all school libraries, which is an extreme reaction. So part of living in a diverse democracy is recognizing that different people have voices on this and want to see that representation. I think for a lot of young people as well, And in particular, you know, young LGBTQ youth, you know, it's a time of finding identity, and it's a time often where books can be a lifeline for those who might be in unsafe home environments, and books are accessed in public schools. And so the risk is taking away that lifeline, beyond which, you know, there is such a value, as we know, to growing empathy in society across lines of difference mm-hmm. by having young people read books that teach them something about somebody else. And we all ought to have opportunity in our education to have that curiosity and imagination and opportunity to learn about diversity presented to us.
So who's pushing this agenda of banning books? Because it seems to be a group of activists that in many cases don't even live in the area where they're trying to ban books. I mean, that was the case here in the Treasure Valley with the Nampa School Board, and them, you know, now having rule now deciding to put a plan together. And one of the things they're going to say is, you must live in the district in order to make a complaint.
Yeah, I think so. Look, the public schools are public institutions, and that means that they haven't historically faced this problem of anyone anywhere getting upset about the books that they have. And it's a question. But when you look across the country, that's actually not just unique to whether it's unique to Idaho or unique to anywhere else. That is actually fairly common. So it's not to say that there are no parents involved in this in any place, or that, you know, there is no legitimacy to parents who want to get involved in this and, you know, raise concerns about books. But the pattern historically of isolated cases, you know, one individual reacts to one book, is not what we are seeing right now. We are seeing massive lists of books circulated online, the same books targeted in district after district after district. And we are seeing, you know, in where it has shaded into being covered by local news, one of the interesting facts that you see when you start reading stories from Florida and Tennessee and other places is, yeah, a lot of the time the people driving it don't appear to have children in public school. Now, some of them are people who have children, they've opted to homeschool. Some of them have grown children. So there are different dynamics here. And some of them are parents and some of them do have kids in public school. So you can't issue, you know, blanket statements about everywhere and everyone who has these feelings. But certainly there are cases, and I think we're going to see more as more press digs into these stories of who is behind this. I think it's fair to say that you're going to find that in many places, the same questions are being asked. And then also, I'll just add that in a lot of places, it's not only activists who've gotten involved in groups or who have become interested in these issues through online channels. There are also a lot of elected officials who have used their office to get involved on this issue, again, raising questions about where the line is and what is the appropriate way for a state official to issue decrees about, well, what can be in a school library altogether.
I want to thank you for your time. What an interesting discussion. And we should note that Dr. Jonathan Friedman, who is the director of Free Expression and Education Programs at PEN America, will be in Boise this Friday for the City Club of Boise Forum. And we will put more information on our website, boisestatepublicradio.edu. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Friedman.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Gemma Gaudette, and this is Idaho Matters.